Title of the message is Sure, I Believe.
You're counting on me to get that right in the bulletin.
I did today anyway. James 2, 14 through 17. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed," but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it does not accompanied by actions, is dead. Shortly before the death of Thoreau, a pious aunt visited him and asked, "Have you made your peace with God, Henry?" Henry says, "I don't know if we ever quarreled." Henry Thoreau, David Thoreau was an American essayist, a poet, a philosopher, a naturalist, a tax resister, surveyor, and a historian, amongst many things. He later worked with Ralph Waldo Emerson about transcendental movement. Thoreau's philosophy of civil disobedience later influenced political thoughts and actions of such figures as Leo Tolstoy, Gandhi, and Martin Luther King Jr. His basic premise was that there was a higher law to study or to live by than civilian law and the obedience to the individual. There was a higher, and the individual had the right to express himself or herself. But yet, there was a higher law other than government and human law. He advocated techniques of boycotting, picketing, and non-payment of taxes. Can you imagine that? But he was a man. I use his quote, his story, a little bit of story, so I want to use him as an example of a man's faith in work, at work. Sometimes we believe, but yet there's nothing attached to that. And that's where James wants to go. James wants to go where that you can say all you want that you believe, but if you don't put that faith into action in some form, it really doesn't amount to anything. It kind of flies against what Paul may have by faith alone, or Martin Luther, the movement by faith alone. But I think if you study each one of them, it continues on more than just faith alone. But that's a theological argument that I'm probably not going to go into today. Abraham Lincoln once remarked to a friend that his religion was like that of an old man named Glenn in Indiana. "When I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. And that's my religion." That's, in a sense, is works only. But I think there's still some faith involved in that also. Now, Lincoln's knowledge of the Bible was impressive, and he was said to have never joined a church, but yet he was a religious man. But yet he was not what would be technically called in his day a Christian. But yet he did believe in a way. Was Lincoln a deist? Well, that's an argument that can be argued also. But Lincoln believed in works. He believed in, stressed the importance of ethical conduct. And here is another man's work at faith. I simply use his quote. There's many people, there's women whose faith, and many ethical diversity of people whose faith many times have been in work. I just happen to use these two examples because I quoted from them. What I understand when I talk about forgiveness, grace, and mercy, that there is a difference between what God does and what we are capable of doing. I may say things that we are should achieve, but yet I realize that all of us will probably fall short of that. But I cannot stand up here and tell you that there's a shortcut and that you should take that shortcut. I have to give it in the best way that I understand, even though it convicts me also. So forgiveness and mercy, in many ways, must travel out to meet us. We're not going to achieve the level in which the Bible talks about, in which Paul argues or James argues. We're just not. Not that we shouldn't strive to. We should certainly strive to, and ongoing try to. But the reality of it, we are not. God's mercy is a gift that travels down to meet us, or out to meet us, however word you want to use. And sometimes it has to travel quite far. And I probably know in my case it traveled quite far. But there are people who think that God cannot reach them, and that are in the lowest, in the pits, in the gutters, and have addiction problems, and whatever problems you can think of, it can travel that far and beyond. The idea is that Paul puts forth, I know we're talking about James, but is that forgiveness, grace, and mercy will travel to that point that is necessary and equal out the sins that we as humans produce. That's how far it'll go, whatever need is necessary. We remember the story of the lost sheep. We have the picture of Jesus with the sheep crook reaching out across the cliff and left the 99 and reached out and tried to get that very last sheep. I think that's that and beyond is where God's forgiveness and grace and mercy. But yet, I also know that life sometimes requires us to get down into the mud of life. There's just no other way to put it. Even in church things and church dealings, the reality of it is life puts out in front of us things in which we can't always act in the highestness of the biblical concepts. How does one deal with the flood in Texas when a person is losing everything that they're having and standing on the roof? Do you wonder where God is in that time? Where is his mercy in these things? Yes, as things progress, many people will extend mercy and help and provide. But yet, in this whole process, it's still not over yet. The water is still rising. How would you feel standing there? Would you question God? Would you wonder what's happening? I do believe that sound spiritual principles and religious faith helps us lift us out of the mud of life. But yet, it doesn't free us from the mud of life. We seem to go up and then down and up and down. There's always changing events in our life. Some people talk and preach a victorious life. I believe that we can be victorious in various different ways in our life. But total victory, in which I rise above the fray of things that are happening, I wonder if people are living life if they think that point. I think that's a point of self-deception. The life requires us to engage. Do you think Abraham Lincoln and such people were freed from the mud of life? They dealt with it in a lot of different ways, with a lot of different scars. I talk about some in previous minutes about forgetting. Yes, I believe God will stamp out our trespasses and remember them no more. But do we? I can't. About the most that I'm going to do is detach my emotions from it, the event, and look at it from a distance. That's about as far as I'm going to probably get. Am I going to totally forget it, even though I may preach that we should? It's not hardly humanly possible. It remains in our minds. We're human beings. But yet the biblical principle is that God will stamp that out. Can we? More than likely not. Paul, a man of great faith, which the church is built upon, a lot of his teachings, even he had difficulty with things. He understood that in Romans he talks about the things that I want to do, I can't do. And the things that I don't want to do, I find myself doing. He says, oh, what a wretched man I am. This is called human life. Even though we talk about all these high principles in which we try to elevate ourselves up to. I think total victory or victory from life is at the end and at the death. Oh, when Paul talks about, oh death, where is thy sting, oh grave, where is thy victory? I think there one can claim a victorious life. But am I going to live a victorious life now? I'm going to struggle through life just the way with everybody else. I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to have high times. I'm going to have low times. And I'm going to have fun times. But isn't that life? Isn't that faith at works? Faith is like electricity. You only see the light. You can't see it, but you see the light. I guarantee if you grab a hold of the wires, you're going to feel it. But it's like that. Faith is also, faith without works is like an automobile without gas. You're not going to go anywhere. To some extent, that's what James is pointing at. But James also is pointing out that you must have faith also. You can't be devoid of faith. Out of your faith and what you believe, operate. That's how you operate out of. One can have faith in a wrong principles and wrong ideas and operate out of that and be totally wrong. I know people who believe certain things and they believe they're actually right. They have faith in these ideas, but they're, in my eyes, are totally wrong. They're too judgmental. I can give examples, but I won't. Not in this church, but in other people and friends of mine that I know. Before a person sets out to test his faith by trying to move a mountain, he should begin with a molehill and work up. Some people believe that faith is about moving objects. And to that point, I think faith will remove bad concepts and ideas and beliefs. That's what I consider a mountain to be. Not a literal mountain over there where I can cast it into the sea, where the Bible says. A mountain is referred, and the Bible is talking to about a theological point of view of the way you think and you believe. And you can cast that into the sea and never and not have it no more. You can get rid of it and move it. But I think sometimes we ought to start out a little bits at a time and work and change. Change is hard. I also think in this passage here in the beginning, it says, it doesn't do any good to say to some people, go in faith. Go and not do nothing about it. He's saying here that you can't, when you find somebody in need, you can't just say to them, go, be clothed, go have faith. You can't tell that person that they're going to be that because they're in a condition because they lack faith. That is done. You can look around and you can listen, and you are living a faithful life is seen as being attached to a successful life. I don't think that's true. I think it starts out at many different levels and goes and travels. A person is not, because one is lacking faith, does not mean that that person or is in trouble all the time or doesn't have a nice, smooth life because that person is lacking a faith. I don't think that is true. I think that's where faith really is coming, is at work. Faith must be accompanied by actions. I want to go back in the last closing moments of the message and talk about a parable that I was going to use at the end of the last Sunday's message, but because of the many different discussions and opinions, I don't seem to get any this Sunday, but we had a ton of them last Sunday. So I guess everybody's quiet today.
Maybe we learned our lesson.
No. Learning. We're all learning. And I want to close with a parable that in Matthew 18, talking about forgiving people. And then he goes on, because Peter asked him, how many times are we supposed to give somebody, our brother or sister, who sinned against us? Seven times. That was a biblical law in the Old Testament. Some are pointing to that point, but Jesus goes on and say that you are to give 70 times seven, or forever. You are to forgive from now on. And then he goes on to tell about a parable about the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle his accounts. And so he came to his servant, and this man owed him 10,000 bags of gold, and he says, okay, I want paid up. And the servant says, I can't. And so the master was going to order his wife and his children to be sold into slavery until the repayment of the debt. And so the servant got down on his knees and begged his master to have patience on him, and I will pay him back. And the master took pity on him and canceled his debt and let him go. He showed mercy to the servant. The master showed mercy to his servant to the point beyond which he needed to show fairness. That's what mercy is. Mercy is beyond what is considered to be fair. So he didn't say, okay, I'll be patient with you until you pay me back. That would have been fair and equitable. That would have been justice to some extent. He went on to say, extended him and removed the debt altogether. That's mercy. That's what mercy is about. It's beyond fairness. And so the servant was happy and glad, and he went out to his fellow servants that owed him a couple hundred silver coins, and he grabbed a hold of them and choked them and said, okay, I want paid now. And he went on, and he wanted to his fellow servants got down on their knees and begged him to be patient. And he said, we'll pay you back. But the man would not, or the servant would not, and threw them in prison and until they would pay his debt. What is implied up to this point was, we are given mercy, we should extend mercy. But in the story, this didn't happen. And so the master found this out, and he said, you wicked servant, I have canceled all the debts of yours because you begged me. I think in that aspect of it is that we are forgiven. Many dimensions or many slices of Christianity believe in forgiveness. But when we look to someone else, we don't want to forgive them. Not even within churches. We have a very tough time of extending forgiveness across the aisle. So in this sense, I'm not saying us here, I'm speaking in generalities. We are part of this parable. We don't want to extend mercy to others, let alone forgiveness or justice, all these other things that go with equality, what have you. We are not very far down the road on that aspect of it, not even within the churches. Not even in this district are we to that point, believe it or not. I'm not going to go into any. We are. And so what happened? The master found out about it. And he said, he threw the first servant in jail and said, look, I've done this for you. You didn't show mercy. And now, he says, in the anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. The word here is should. What? At this point, I think sometimes we look at that parable, we say, well, God gave mercy to this person, and then he took it back. But I don't see that as a case. I think the mercy, it was still there. Now it's incumbent on the individual to accept mercy within themselves. I see this parable as saying, now you are in jail. You will be tortured by your lack of giving for mercy, your lack of forgiveness, your lack of forgiveness, grace, and mercy to others. And now those spirits, that you will be in jail within yourself and tortured by these spirits until you as an individual servant or us can forgive ourselves and have mercy upon ourselves. And then he will be freed again. Should implies sometime down the future. Until he should. So the parable is holding out hope to the individual, in this case the servant, that at some time he should decide. It wasn't that you never are going to have mercy again. It's incumbent on us as individuals at this point.
Well, those tormentors that are tormenting this guy until he forgives, that's like when you take on hatred for someone else. You're
yes,
like,
same way.
You're taking a poison and thinking it's going to kill them.
Yes.
You're suffering from yes. the poison you've taken in yourself.
Right. And you torture yourself in this process. And so you have to forgive yourself and to remove that hatred, to move, and you're in jail because of that. And you can't operate in the way that you should. But it's still incumbent on the individual. So Jesus, in a sense, in his story, is turning mercy around and saying, okay, it's still there for you, but now you have to forgive yourself. And I think that's where I wanted to end up in the message last Sunday. It is very difficult, I think, sometimes. We can forgive others, but do we really forgive ourselves? How much mercy do we have on ourselves? How much freedom do we allow ourselves to have forgiveness, grace, and mercy so we can live a free life in Christ? Live in the freedom which Christ talks about. That's where I think we have struggled, and that's where we need to go and forgive ourselves. Amen.
Those who are visiting, please don't have no obligation to participate. The services are a gift to you. For those who consider Canoe Camp to be your church home, we want to thank you for your faithfulness, participate financially in the ongoing support of this ministry.
As I waken each morning, from the shadow of night to a clear blue sky and the sun shining bright, I am filled with wonder at the glorious sight. Every day is a gift from the time to learn and grow. a gift from the
Precious name.